Dr. Lynn Kelly's new book, The Memory Code, tells the story of the discovery of a powerful memory technique used by our Neolithic ancestors, how it relates to some of the biggest anthropological and archaeological mysteries today, and how we can use this secret to train our minds. In ancient pre-literate cultures across the globe, tribal elders had amazing memories. They could name all the animals and plants across the landscape, identify the stars in the sky, and recite the history of their people. Yet today, most of us struggle to memorize more than a short poem. The question is why? Dr. Lynn Kelly looks to answer it in the new book, The Memory Code, The Secrets of Stonehenge, Easter Island, and Other Ancient Monuments. Dr. Lynn Kelly is a science writer and an honorary research associate at La Trobe University, and it is a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Dr. Kelly, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. It's lovely to be here.
What brought you to this particular subject of looking at these mysteries of anthropology and archaeology?
It was really a bit of a stumble. I was looking at the way indigenous cultures know about animals and plants and realized there were so many thousands that they were storing in memory, and I can't remember anything. I started asking the question, how do they memorize so much stuff? And ended up stumbling over these memory methods and then the link to archaeology.
So when you stumble over this, obviously, I assume there comes a deluge of questions. And where do you begin in such a pursuit to answer those questions?
That was quite a staggering part. I was doing a PhD, a doctorate, and I had a contract for a book about that information. And it just became a deluge. Just a simple thing like a report on the Navajo, who store 700 insects, fully classified to three levels, all the information about them in their brains. And that's just insects, add all the other animals and plants. So I just had this huge range of reports on those sorts of things. So it really just took years and years of slogging away at it and looking at the way, especially informed by our Australian Aboriginal people, on how they memorize so much information.
Using these traditional Aboriginal Australian songlines as a starting point, you have since identified the memory technique used by Indigenous people around the world. Talk a little bit about that key and ultimately what it unlocks.
The method used by Australian Aboriginal people, what are called songlines, as you mentioned, basically as you walk through the bush, as we call it in Australia, at each location they would perform a ritual. Now, a ritual is just a repeated event, so they would sing a song or a dance, and those record practical information. So the song might be about particular animal, plant, water holes, how to make particular tools from the stones there. And at each location, they would add this information till they had about 1,000 songs. So that song line would navigate, and they've recorded 800 kilometres of song lines for one elder of the Yanyuwa people, so all held in memory. And that acts as sort of an index to all the information, like a table of contents to their encyclopedia. So in Native American terms, it's a pilgrimage trail. The Inca, they're called Keks, C-E-Q-U-E-S. I'm not sure how that's pronounced here. And so these are known from all over the world. They're also known from the ancient Greek and Roman orators. They all used the same method. They called it the method of Loci, or memory palaces. And modern memory champions all use them as well. So my jump through really was realizing that it's indigenous people that use them as well, and it's the way the human brain works.
And it allowed people in many non-literate cultures to memorize just vast amounts of information that they needed to survive. But the question is, A, how, and B, how did that wear off over time where that memory technique is not employed now as it was then?
how is that they start as young children learning the stories, and the sort of stories and songs that we hear as non-initiated people are just the children's stories that set up the foundation. And then with initiation, they would learn higher and higher levels of complex information. So stuff that is about their long-term survival would be taught much later and kept restricted, because you don't want the so-called Chinese whispers effect. You don't want it corrupted by people talking about it. So that would be kept very restricted. And over time, they would learn more and more. And because it's constantly repeated, they would keep it in track. And in fact, we have research now from Australia showing some stories have been kept accurate for 7,000 years. It's hard to believe, but it's to do with the landscape. And the research is very robust. If these methods were taught right up into the Middle Ages, in all schools through classical times and Greco-Roman times and then the Middle Ages, and lost during the Renaissance because writing is so much easier. But we've lost something in doing so, and I think there's a role for them back in education, alongside literacy, not replacing it, obviously, because you get big pictures when you've got the information in memory.
So basically, and I don't want to oversimplify this, but it is a mnemonic device, right?
Absolutely.
It's a mnemonic technique that we would use in many cases, but obviously much more intricate. I'm curious into how then it is used and how that extrapolates into these incredible monuments, to Stonehenge, Easter Island, and the many that you write about in the book.
That was another leap from the Aboriginal people, because not only do they use the landscape, they use a whole lot of physical devices. So objects that, like a piece of wood or stone with abstract markings on it. And by touching each of them, that would remind them to sing that particular song. Now, I found this extremely hard to believe that this would work, but I copied an African memory board. I'm going to see one for the first time in the Brooklyn Museum tomorrow. I'm really excited about it. But I copied it and made basically a bit of wood and stuck some beads on it and touched each one. I have recorded the 412 birds for my state in taxonomic order, and I can reel off the lot. I can bore your listeners witless by doing it now. And it works as the most effective memory aid. It's really weird. And that's just the same thing of using the landscape, but using it on a small device. So I start to realize they were using a whole range of physical devices. When I went to Stonehenge with my husband, who just qualified as an archaeologist, we both went back to university as mature age students, I thought to myself, when they're not moving around the landscape anymore, how are they going to make sure they don't lose this information? Oh, well, that's easy. They've replicated the landscape in a circle of stones, replicated their annual cycle around the landscape in a circle of stones. And that's where it started. And it turned out no one had suggested it before. But that's 10 years ago.
Right. And we see this, and this is really worldwide, isn't it? I mean, we see evidence of this certainly in the United States.
Yes. There's a site in Louisiana called Poverty Point, which has circles of timber. Were there in the plaza there and the mounds and so on. That was a hunter-gatherer culture. And those are the same sort of dimensions as the circles of posts in the British Neolithic, that Stonehenge has, that area has both posts and stones. And because it's not that they had any contact with each other at all. The reason is that the human brain works, this particular method works so well. So the most successful cultures were the ones that used it. The great houses in New Mexico, the ancestral Pueblo site, which is absolutely extraordinary. I've never been moved so much by anywhere as there. And again, there's all sorts of signs, but it's implemented differently because they had stone in Louisiana. They haven't got stone. So they use timber. There's all sorts of different methods depending on how large the community is and how advanced it is.
When you look at this and how far it goes and ultimately, as you say, how it could still be used and employed today. How much of that was a surprise to you? Could you get a sense when you read the book that this exploration, each step you took, was a new revelation to you?
There were moments of great excitement because it was really interesting and it seemed I was breaking new ground. And because of that, it was also a lot of self-doubt. Because how could somebody as ordinary as me see something that other people hadn't? But now that I've talked to the British Neolithic experts, the book's endorsed by Stonehenge experts and so on, and it got a PhD and an academic book first, really what happened is I happened to be in Australia where we have a 40,000-year continuous hunter-gatherer culture, plus new research was coming out from the archaeologists. My timing was just perfect. But there was a lot of self-doubt, so there was a lot of other people checking what I was doing and trying to find fault with it so I could go back to the original book I was supposed to be writing. And eventually I just decided, well, I'm going to take this risk and go with this wild idea.
How has it paid off for you, this wild idea, in your day-to-day life? I'm not just in writing about it, but of having that code embedded in you?
It's changed my life completely because I've started implementing these methods myself. So I now, if I walk around the block from my house, I can walk right through prehistory. I started 4.5 million years ago, right through prehistory, then I walk right through history. So I'm walking through time. So if I stop at, say, the 1200 AD, a road round the corner from us, I can see that the ancestral Pueblo people have built their massive great houses. I can see that Great Zimbabwe in Africa is flourishing. King John's on the throne in England. I don't have to remember any of this. In my head right at this moment is that location. I'm seeing the tree that's King John, the little road that's Zimbabwe. I can look ahead to the Crusades that have started. And I can see what's going on, the Song Dynasty, the church over on the corner is the Song Dynasty in China. So I now have a complete grounded system for all of history. I've done the same with every country in the world in population order. I've got hooks for everything. So if I see something on the news, I've got a hook to add it to or anything I want to learn. And it really is fantastic and it's good fun because you make up stories and songs and things to go with it.
It is a fascinating book. It is entitled The Memory Code, The Secrets of Stonehenge, Easter Island, and Other Ancient Monuments. It is published by Pegasus Books. Dr. Lynn Kelly, thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
It's been fantastic. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Memory Code, published by Pegasus by Dr. Lynn Kelly. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.